Hey fam, welcome back to Real Talk with Caleb. Glad, so thankful that you found us on your dials again. Hey, I wasn't playing around when I said we're going to have Katie and Caleb's take on fill in the blank. Hey, we've got Katie back on. It's evening time for us. Don't know what it is for you, but I hope you're blessed wherever you are and whatever time it is. Enough out of me. Let's get to Katie and get some of that real talk wisdom. Y'all, see you on the other side. You ready to talk about some stuff?
Let's talk about some stuff.
Let's do it. Let me set my timer. I'm going to set us for like 30 minutes. That way we'll stay true to it.
I'm proud of you.
Well, we'll actually see what happens, you know. Hey, well, welcome back to Real Talk with Caleb. We got Katie back on. You already know who she is. Hashtag wisdom. That's what I'm going to start calling her. But anyway, she's on tonight to talk about, well, it's tonight for us. I don't know when you're listening to this. It could be morning. It could be afternoon. But she's here to talk to us today about leadership traps. Katie, what's going on in your world today?
Hey, good to hear from you. Good to see you, brother. It is, this is a topic that really has got me thinking. And the more I thought about this one, the more I realized that all of the leadership traps we're going to talk about are ones that I have been so guilty of.
So we're going to have vulnerable moments with Katie tonight, then. Maybe we should
read vulnerable moments with Katie.
Hey, that's maybe an idea for a fourth or fifth episode. So what's on your mind when you say leadership traps? Just kind of, I guess, give us an idea of kind of what you're thinking about and where we're going to go with this. And then, yeah, let's jump into a couple of examples and give the audience, you know, a real talk brief, if you will. So we'll keep it 30 minutes or less. And let's get after it. Fire away.
So I think when we think about leadership pitfalls, it's places that leaders get it wrong, no matter who they are. You can have the best heart and want the best for your people, but there is nobody out there who's going to get it right 100% of the time. And so I'll tell you, one of the things that I really think is a leadership trap that I see a lot is the, I'll do it myself.
Oh, preach.
It's easier to do it myself than to take the time to train somebody else or to watch them try and fail. And so we just take on and we take on and we take on. And then I think at some point it leads us to a second trap, which is the, I'm too busy. Mm-hmm. I can't find time for that. When am I supposed to do X, Y, or Z? I'm too busy.
It's like a badge of honor, huh? Like when we say, like, oh, like me and you were just chatting before, oh, just so busy. And it's almost like a badge of honor, huh?
It is. And it's so much of it is self-inflicted. So much of it is issues that we create because it's easier to do it myself. So I'll just take it all on myself because I know how I want it done, or I don't want to bother other people. And so we're not teaching as we go. And then you take on everything yourself, and then you don't have time to be present for the human beings you're supposed to be leading.
Why do you think it is, like, if we could just, you know, extrapolate a little bit on why we do it ourselves, the do it yourself, you know, line, if you will, what do you think the real cause is? You alluded to something there, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. Why do you think it is that, yeah, there's one thing to be said about, hey, I want it done my way, or I want to do it, get it right, or whatever. But what do you think the real culprit there is, and how do we address it?
So I think part of it is a need for control. I won't say control freak, but I will say that a lot of people, and I have been guilty of this, when you're a control enthusiast and you want to control the every outcome, the best way to do that is to control all of the input. And so if you do it yourself, then you know you're guaranteed the outcome. But then when you try to take a step back or take a knee or take time off, it gets into the, well, I can't take leave because I can't find time in my schedule. I can't take time off. And when I am off, everybody's calling me because they need X, Y, and Z. Well, of course they are, because you've made yourself the single point of failure. I think part of it's ego.
No.
I do. I think whether we want to own it or not, part of it is ego. I think there's something inherently that feels good about being the go-to person, being the one with the knowledge, being the one who knows how to do things. And then I think part of it is a little bit of insecurity. if I teach somebody else how to do it and then they're better than me, are they going to dim my light?
Oh, yeah.
And I think those are the quiet parts that we don't want to say out loud, Caleb.
You're right. You know, Brené Brown talks about, she talks more so about it as it pertains to children, youth, about, you know, people that blow out your candle, right? And she talks about it a little bit differently about, I mean, your heart, your soul, everything that you're about. And at a young, tender age, you know, we can blow each other's candles out, sometimes on purpose, sometimes inadvertently. And sometimes, maybe a lot of times, it doesn't really seem to go away as we grow up, right, Katie? I mean, it's, you know, people like you just alluded to, ego, insecurity is a big one. Sometimes I wonder if it's, we don't know how to actually coach people. You know, we know how we can do it, but I don't think we always are great at explaining how we do it, or, you know, how we got to where we are. I see that, you know, across our Air Force in multiple different grades, if you will, you know, promote, you know, not promotion, but pay grades, you know, and you ask somebody sometimes like how they got there to review an EPR or whatever, right? They're like, they'll give you a line, but it's a line of, you know what, most of the time or some of the
right.
time. The other piece you hit on was being like the go-to person. There is a, I won't say narcissism in that, sometimes probably, but you know, like when I played football, I liked being the defensive end that could get the job done. And I, you know, took pride in that. I liked being needed on that team, or at least feeling like I was needed. And then guess what? I snapped my neck in, you know, 3, 4, and 5. And guess what? They replaced me. You know, I fractured it, you know, I had some hairline stuff in my neck, and they replaced me in a heartbeat, and that next guy stepped up and did it. So, so ego, insecurity, am I on to anything when I'm talking about maybe we don't know how to coach, or is that just a Caleb?
No, I think we hit it on the head. We know how to manage, and we think we know how to lead. I don't think we know how to coach. And if anybody, for anyone who's into sports, if you take a step back and you watch, you know, when you're watching the March Madness during NCAA, or you're watching your favorite football team, the coaches haven't played in a long time and they're not playing. They're not on the field. They're not taking the plays. They're not handling the ball, but they are constantly with the clipboard, diagramming, showing, explaining, walking people through it. And we don't necessarily do that. I think we feel, because we spent so much time on the field, we feel we need to be on the field. We have to be in the mix. And we're not taking the time with the clipboard to draw out the plays and then let our players execute.
Yeah. You know, that's sometimes I think potentially leaders maybe feel like they're micromanaging. You know, if they're on the sideline with the clipboard, you know, and then like, hey, I'm just telling people how to do it, or maybe I'm not going to be considered a legit leader because we know you got to be down there with the people, you know, whatever that means to you when you hear that in our audience. And there is some truth to that, right? We have to earn our cred, you know, our street cred, if you will. That's the old person in me coming out. I'm not using the new terms, but the street cred, right? If we're not in the trenches, there's a time and a place for that, but that's where I see the biggest transition struggle. I don't know about you, Katie, but in the Air Force at the Master Sergeant level, that's where I see like one of the biggest transition struggles, because you go really, a lot of our technical sergeants are still out running jobs, right? Running crews, right. Running mission. And in some cases our Master Sergeants are, but when that Master Sergeant gets either promotes to Master and in your career field, it's a change to more management leadership and a different type of leadership versus in the trenches leadership. And in some career fields, maybe you go a little ways as a Master Sergeant before you hit that point. That's where I think I'm really interested in what our PME does in the future when it comes to our Senior NCO Academy, focusing on peer competition and things of that nature. I really believe that we'll start getting after some stuff in the right ways, but that's where I see the coaching gap. You know, I've seen it before, and I've told people, like, a lot of times it's you might think it as micromanaging, but you would never, like, for me as a football guy, when I was coaching peewee football, because when I ended up injured, I just started coaching. And I guess when they, you know, the old adage of when you can no longer do it, you start teaching or coaching. But so I, you know, I tell them, I was like, there's no way I would put an athlete on the field and then just turn my back and hope for the best.
Right.
Right. So what is your take, or what would be your advice on some of this, on this first point where you're like, do it myself? We've kind of uncovered some stuff with egos and some insecurity and maybe a gap in coaching. What would be your advice on
first of like some recognition, right? Like, how do you start recognizing, because also feedback, we don't do that great either, but how do you start recognizing it? What are some of the signs? And then how do you combat that? Because, you know, on Real Talk, I like to, you know, let's expose the problem, then let's provide some advice on how to maybe get around that or work through it.
So I think if you find yourself with your plate too full and your answer is, I just need to get a bigger plate, and you look at everything you're responsible for and you can't figure out what you can empower somebody else to do, then you have a problem. You're doing too much yourself. If you are thinking, I cannot give this task or that task or this project to my team because they can't handle it, then you have a problem. That means you haven't coached them up.
Yeah.
If they are not competent or confident enough to handle it, that's a you problem. And that it's really hard to take that deep look inside, but that's where you have to start carving out the time to do a little left seat, right seat, to talk them through the why, and then take your hands off and let them go. And I think if you find yourself, the boundaries that you've set are being encroached upon, where you're answering three or four work questions a night, where you feel you can't take leave because you can't disconnect, that is the number one sign that you need to take leave and disconnect. And you should have an out of office that says, contact this person, and X person should be empowered to handle it. And if you don't think they are, you need to start coaching them up.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, I've been called a lot of things in my time. And, you know, a little bit more about my story than a lot of people, but I've been through some stuff. And so I look at things from a combat type of situation a lot of times. Now, so it's, I don't want the audience to get the wrong impression. I never kicked in doors and pulled the trigger on somebody's face, but I have been in some situations in Afghanistan. So that's how I equate it, is always preparing our airmen for the task at hand, the mission at hand, or the theoretical mission. So I wonder, you know, if our people looked at it as like, hey, if I'm the go-to person, kind of like my football example as well, if I'm the go-to person and I get vaporized, you know, because that's some of the stuff in the future that, you know, our peer competitors aren't AK-47, the flip-flops, right? I mean, I know our competition in that region of the world, in the CENTCOM region, they did end up, you know, having some other help and some other things we won't go into details on here, but, you know, there was more than that. But initially it's, you know, like some people that are angry and it could cause damage. But when we started raining fire from the sky, you know, that's what they called it, you know. And when our first special forces went in, they could not figure out like how fire was coming from the heavens. But so it's like biblical proportions. But when we're facing our peer competition, what, you know, if we have our people look at it from that angle of like, hey, I'm not preparing those to come behind me or beside me to do, and if I'm not building and coaching them and trusting them to do our mission, and I get vaporized, then what happens, right? And I don't wish ill will, and I hope we never get into that type of conflict. But if we do, are we really preparing our people? So right now, somebody might be listening to this, be like, all right, come on, Chiefs. Y'all talking about, you know, preparing people. I'm working on some paperwork now. But what if we took it to the next level? What is your perspective, Katie, on kind of going a little more hardcore on it as I'm going down that chain, just that trail, just a little bit of what are we doing? If we can't coach people on how to do some of the tasks we're doing now, what would be your advice of how we prepare for combat?
So I think we need to stop pretending that combat's not coming. You know, readiness and readiness shortfalls are a very real thing. In some units, they still do it, but I'll tell you, it's been a long time since I've done a bag drag. You know, we used to do the phase one and the phase two OREs and ORIs, and you did the bag drag and you did the chocks and all of that. And you knew what was supposed to be in your bag. It's been a long time since we've done that. When is the last time that as a supervisor, as a leader, you've walked your airmen through what a three-ring standby really looks like, what it means to truly be ready to go? Because, you know, even in a COVID time, we've gotten some seriously short notice taskings. And were they for pure combat, depending on your AFS, probably not. But we had some very short notice taskings and they came rapid fire. And we were sending people all over. Mm. Are your airmen ready?
Yeah.
Do they know how to get their home life together so that they can pack and go? Do they know what a packing list looks like? Or are they surprised at what we actually expect them to take with them downrange? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we all believe that it'll be just in time. We'll have plenty of time. But I can tell you, when 9/11 happened, I was at work that morning. We ended up flipping shifts. So I was there overnight. And then I was on the first plane out the morning of September 13th. I had two little ones at home I had to get somebody to take care of. Mm-hmm. And then I had to get packed. I had to shoot. I had to do all of the things. Yeah. But I had been through the bag drags and I'd been through the repetitions. Thank you, PACAF, for 3 years of exercises.
Hoorah, PACAF.
But I knew what to do and I knew what to expect. And I think right now, when we're talking about coaching, do our airmen know, you know, our day to day, we get into that grind of, well, we're just doing paperwork. We're just turning training sorties, but we're not. Do they understand why our pilots need to be CMR, you know, combat mission ready? How many sorties it takes to get there, and then what it takes to support them on the other end, and what that packing list looks like.
Yeah, you know, some similar to like a team concept, right? You know, the Air Force is a team. Sometimes we say family, but that takes work. That sometimes that we're just not afforded. And then we have to be careful when we compare it to family, because you have family like maybe some of the rest of us, and you're like, I don't want to be.
Right. Exactly.
However, a lot of competitive type sports, we are that. And so, you know, I'll be just a little frank here, and hopefully I don't hurt anybody's feelings, but when I was preparing for anything I did in life, whether it was playing a football game or going to Afghanistan, I wanted to be a badass, and I wanted everybody with me to be on that same level. You know, you have to put, like you said it before, Keith, put ego in your cargo pocket, just move integrity and your core, rest your core values, to, you know, slide stuff around and slide ego in the pocket. And then get after preparing our people to be badasses. And I'll tell you what, one thing that really struck me, I had an opportunity last week. I was TDY to Maxwell Air Force Base, to where I'm going to be going here in a little bit, and the International Officer Honor Roll. And let me tell you, Katie, that was a humbling experience. I'm really excited about that, being able to join that mission. But hearing their officers and some of their SIMSAP equivalents talk about our enlisted force, and talk about like that's the competition or the competitive edge. I mean, and you know, I was sitting there, I was listening to Chief Bass, our SIMSAP, you know, and I was listening to some of the other international partners, and I had like not an epiphany or light bulb moment, but a deep sense of urgency and a call in to not let our partners down. How do we keep that competitive edge? And we do that by getting after what you're talking about, Katie, is not falling into these leadership pitfalls and actually coaching and preparing our airmen in those roles, whatever the roles are. I know we're changing a lot as an Air Force and things we're getting after, but understanding our core competencies, understanding what your career field is supposed to bring to the fight, and preparing our people. So we beat that one up a little bit, and we were on a mission to get out as much information as quick as possible. And I'll have to slow down how much I'm talking, but the too busy, I know you mentioned about, hey, do it all myself. We kind of took care of that. The too busy, I kind of see as rolling in there, but anything else on, I'm just too busy, the badge of honor stuff we kind of alluded to, anything else you want to touch on that, Katie, or any other points that you want to bring up on this?
No, I think we need to, I think really, just the I'm too busy and I do too many things. It's not a badge of honor. It's not. And we need to stop wearing it like it's a competition. Yeah. Because it's not. It's not. It means that you're either not managing your time well, or you're underdeveloping those around you. But either way, it's not saying flattering things about you. So I think we brag about it because we think it makes us look good. And I don't always think we see what it really says.
How do, what would be your advice then? Let's take it up a couple of levels. And there's people in mine in your positions that have these same pitfalls. We're all human, right?
Right.
But if you're in a position of leadership and you're looking at your team and you start seeing this, how do we address that? What would be your advice on leaders in a position, an advantage, a tactical advantage, if you will, to see the team as like, hey, I got Caleb's over here and he's struggling a little bit. I think he sees this as a badge of honor. How do we help coach Caleb? And there's so many different personalities and there's so many different approaches, but what would be your number one, I guess, advice or go-to for leaders that are like, hey, I hear what the Chiefs are saying here. I'm going to have some introspection. I'll look at myself and see where I need to adjust. And then I'd like to go back to that point about circle, like we talked earlier in your last episode. But in the interim of them trying to help people themselves, what would be your advice on to those leaders?
So I think you look at your absolute rock stars and then you have an honest conversation with yourself. Hard in the Air Force, the one thing we do well is hard work is always rewarded with more hard work. We have our go-to person and we fire and forget. It's easy to, that is our go-to person. When as a leader, your first impulse is, I'm going to give that to Caleb because I know he can handle it. Stop yourself, look left and right across your formation and figure out who your next Caleb is going to be. Because if Caleb's my rock star and he's my go-to and my fire and forget, I can either burn him out or I can use his flame to start lighting some other candles. And then at the end of the day, I could have two more Calebs, which build four more Calebs, which gives me eight more Calebs. And that's what we call a high-performing team. So if you're a leader who sees somebody who is burning out, don't tell them, I see you burning out. I'm going to start taking things from you. Use them to say, hey, you're my go-to. You're my trusted go-to. Help me build another like you. Who out there has the potential? Get the buy-in and then let them start developing that person. And you will see that it will start becoming cultural, that we will start building more rock stars instead of burning out the ones we've got.
You're absolutely right, Caleb, or Katie. I don't know why I said Caleb. That's some great wisdom. It makes me think of, I won't mention their name because I didn't ask permission to use their name, but they put out on social media, and everybody can draw their own conclusions to who I'm talking about, but about weaponized success. There was a rather, I won't say lengthy, but there was an article out there on social media, so people can go out and just search for it and you'll find it. But and I kind of wrote I wouldn't say a rebuttal. I talked to that individual and asked them if they were okay with me writing a piece, like a response, if you will, not a rebuttal, but a response to. And so when I hear you say that, Katie, I hear you talking about a little bit of the same vein there, where, you know, there's that weaponized success, and that article, that person was writing it from a little bit different perspective, but sort of the same from what I'm hearing you say of, as leaders, and your advice to not do this, a lot of times we fall into that trap. Not only if we're not going to do it ourselves, we also fall into the trap of putting it on people that always get the job done and burn it. So that's something else too that I would advise leaders, go read that article and read my response to that, not to promote myself, but read that response. Because there's a lot of goodness in what that master sergeant brought up. Just a quick rabbit hole, because we got a few minutes. I wonder, you know, like some of the senior NCOs I've talked to, some of our in-fire civilian audits, our mid-level managers are really burned out. And this is more Air Force specific, this whole episode is. But I wonder if that has anything to do with the culture that has been created when our junior ranks, when we start talking about force distribution. Because, you know, like they were not looking at strats and not looking at those types of things. So you were a senior NCO. Now, essentially, our senior airmen, through technical sergeant, or that promotion recommendation is like a strap, right? And they see it the same way, right, wrong, or indifferent. No matter what we say, we could sit here and say one thing and they're going to experience what the culture is in their unit. I wonder if that has something to do with our, like to I think our mutual connection there that wrote that article. I wonder if that has something to do with it. Typically you would find senior master sergeants and chiefs kind of at that, some chiefs, right, at that point where you're like, man, I'm worn slap out. And because you've been in the quote unquote game for a little bit, I wonder if that game competition in some cases has started earlier, has started to weigh on our senior NCOs and some of that. What are your thoughts on that? We don't have to go too far into that if you don't want, but just kind of wonder what your thoughts are on that.
No, so I think we fall into a trap of everything is a priority. Mm. Everything is urgent. Everything has to be done right now. And we breed, I don't know that it's the force distribution that is doing it to it. I think it's us. You model the behavior you want to see. If I'm walking around talking about how busy I am and how burnt out I am, I'm going to expect to start hearing that echoed back at me. And if my senior NCOs are echoing it back at me, their NCOs are going to start echoing it back too. And the case in point I use for why language matters and when you hear it echoed back is if you look right now at our senior airmen, so those who've been in about 4 years, statistically and mathematically, they were in eighth grade when we changed the performance report system and went away from 1 through 5, and they will tell me how mad they are they did not get a firewall 5. They will tell me how they got a 3 EPR.
Yeah.
They were in the 8th grade. That language should not be part of their vernacular.
Yeah.
But because they've heard it from their NCOs who heard it from their senior NCOs who heard it from us, it's still something that we're perpetuating. And so in that same vein, if we hear that language echoed back at us, and it's such a small thing, but it's something I think everybody can really stop and think about. They've heard it recently. It's been that long. It's been that long since it went away. And so if you think about that, and then you think about how you're walking around talking about how busy you are and how burnt out you are, then you can't be surprised when you hear it echoed back.
Yeah.
And so culturally, we're hearing our own language echoed back, which means we need to choose our words a little more carefully. It's okay to admit that you're tired. It's okay to admit that you've had a hectic week, but every week cannot be a dumpster fire. It really can't. So I always say, are you having a bad day or are you having a bad 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Are you, you know, that's when people are like, oh, I'm having the worst day. Really though? Or is it just 5 minutes you're focusing on?
Yeah.
And so the same thing about busy calendars. Are you busy 24/7? And if so, how much of that stress are you pushing downward that your own behaviors are now being echoed back at you?
Yeah. I love
and that's
your-
a mirror we don't always want to look in, Caleb.
Oh. That's ugly, right? That's well, I mean, I break mirrors anyway without any real introspection. So when I give them some real introspection, I break mirrors for sure. I love the way you said that. So thanks for clarifying, not force distribution, the forms and the process itself, but people, as you greatly pointed out, is the people and the culture that we create, the words that we say, our expectations as leaders, creating, essentially going back to our connection there about the weaponized success. We for lack of a better phrase, we cultivate that environment, right?
Well,
they're just misguided. They grew up in a certain era and hey, this is what quote unquote made me successful, or at least what they thought made them successful. Going back to my original comment earlier, they don't really know that that's what made them successful.
Right.
They don't. We sat down and looked in the mirror, as you say. So anyway, that's some great wisdom there. Thanks for sharing that with us. But what are some wrap up thoughts from you on this overall topic that we just haven't discussed yet that you really want to make sure that we share with the crowd out there, the team?
So I believe in moderation. Now, having said that, I'm an extreme person. I will admit. So emotionally, on a scale of 1 to 10, my husband is a 5. When he's having a great day, he's a 6. And when he's having a bad day, he's a 4. But he's really even keeled. And I envy that in him because I will be a 10, a 2, and a 4 before I leave the house. So I'll tell you, I believe in moderation, but I don't always practice it. But one thing that I see two extremes of that we have to be really aware of are either the quick fix leadership, which is, I see a problem, I make a decision, this is how we're going to move forward without gathering all of the information. So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is what I call analysis paralysis.
Oh yeah.
The people who decide to refuse to make a decision. When you refuse, and I'm not talking about indecisive back and forth, I'm talking about just refusing to make a decision. I need to have 100% of the information before I decide. So those are the two ends of the spectrum, realizing you're probably never going to have 100% of the information and you need to just make a decision, but also that you can't make a snap judgment. That's a fine tune. And I think if somebody had told me that earlier, if somebody had really earlier said, hey, you need to be in the middle on that. You need to have enough information to make a decision, but don't think you're going to wait until you have every piece of information always. I would have probably saved myself from a lot of heartache, a lot of rework and things, or hurting my own credibility because I made decisions or didn't make decisions that really didn't work out well in the end. I think both ends of that spectrum are so frustrating for the people we lead that I think when we talk about leadership traps, that's one of the biggest ones is, we can't be so quick to snap judgment, but we've got to make a decision. And finding that balance, that is a teeter totter like no one else. And so you've got to be able to have somebody who can help you balance that out.
Absolutely. It goes back to your circle, right?
That does.
Talking about last time we had you on sharing with us. So absolutely. I really love the perspective. If you could, maybe some of the audience hasn't heard that, tie in a quick, 30 second to a minute plug on how the circle, how your circle can come in and help you in avoiding or correcting from some of these leadership traps.
So I will tell you, in this case, my boss is the best thing for me, because typically if I'm having an emotional reaction or I'm quick to judge, he's on the other end of the spectrum. And then we talk it out until we meet in the middle, and we always get to the middle. But if I am fired up, ready to move out, I'm going to move, shoot, communicate right now. We're going to go kick in that door. He is the one who says, okay, but before we do, what is the intel that we have on it? What intel do we have? And it forces me to stop. And there's never any judgment in that conversation. There's never, at the end of the day, if the door needs to be kicked in, we're going to go, but he will help kind of walk through it. And so typically whatever side of an argument I take, he takes the other side automatically to make sure we're not missing anything. And because we have so much trust and so much love for each other, and so much professional respect for each other, we're able to hear each other out without there being any heartache or hurt feelings or any of that. And so that's why having somebody in your circle that you can agree to disagree with and have those healthy debates with is so important, because it will help you see what you're missing, what you can't see from here.
That's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a wrap. That's all the time we got today with the awesome Katie. Thanks again, sis, for being on here. Y'all, you know the deal. Until we talk again, keep it real.